Let's get this holiday show on the road. Hey, everybody, what's up? It's me, your host, Dangerous ASMR, and we're back for a special holiday edition, Drunk and Dangerous, where we'll be reading more of Tribunal Part 2 with a festive atmosphere. Insert festive music here. Anyway, we're continuing on where the guy killed the guy, and then the other guy killed the guy because he killed the guy. Motherfucker, he whispers, was the end of part one. And honestly, I can relate. Who hasn't whispered, motherfucker? You know, all cinematic-like. Anyway, it's part two. I hope you enjoy the festive music to get you in the holiday atmosphere. Whatever holiday that may be, so you can listen to it throughout the year, but you will also be listening to kind of, you know, December-themed music. And too bad you're gonna take it, bitch. Alright, part two of Tribunal. The neighbor, Cynthia Hobart, is the one who called the police. Oh, you spoiled the mystery, not the hoe. How could the sin ho do that? That'd be her hooker name? Sin ho? Sorry. She nearly hit her head on the ceiling when Taylor's shriek cut through the neighborhood. I don't think it was literal, unless she lives in a very tiny house. Sending the rest of the block and a squad of patrol cars to the young man weeping silently in the front yard. I mean, due to people calling the police or because of his shriek alone? Because the way you write it kind of sounds like he has some magical banshee shrieking power and it like called the squad cars to him. Which for a second I was about to be really impressed. Because if you could scream like that, who needs a rape whistle? Who needs the ability to call 911? let's see. And a squad of patrol cars, the young man weeping silently in the front yard. Not that silently. At least not now. no one comes near Taylor for the first 10 minutes. Man, seriously? Because he cried and screamed? They don't come near him? Really? That's it? You know, this isn't Uvalde. Like, you can go. You're not gonna get hurt. They just gawk and try to sneak a peek of anything they can. The bloodier, the better. What the fuck? Okay, your neighbors are vultures. Everyone in the neighborhood had known Mark Jenkins, old man Jenkins. But they had also soaked in the rumors. So the scene was more like cable TV than a tragedy. Oh, that's... I feel like if you know the people, that's kind of... I mean, even if they were close by... You should think about it more than like television. But who do I know? I'm not in this situation. Once Taylor stopped sobbing, his rage and sorrow and red puffy eyes abated to a still stare that could burn holes in even the most opprobrious soul. I doubt that because my soul is extremely opprobrious, so have at it. The police finally approached him. They were afraid of that opprobrious soul. They asked him the standard questions. When he arrived, what he saw, anything strange that might aid their investigation. Wasn't he the one that was screaming? He gives the answers he can, slow and short and uninformative, just like a man fresh from a lobotomy. That's a choice. In fact, that reminds me actually of, this is a complete aside, but it reminds me of this guy who was being interviewed for a murder that he did indeed do. And when the police were questioning him, he decided to just give like yes or no answers or like refuse to comment, but like robotically. And just sat there stock still otherwise. Like, they left the room and he sat basically perfectly still for 2 hours. And that's the opposite of looking innocent, basically. That's kind of what I imagine, like a man with a lobotomy. Just says yes and no. He doesn't tell them about the note. He doesn't tell them about the dream. He doesn't mention Derek. The police leave him be as the rest of the neighborhood takes their turn providing half-hearted condolences. More ceremony than sincerity. Oh yeah, his dad died, right? That was the one whose dad was killed for killing the guy. The guy who killed the guy got killed. He responds, but gives no attention. His mind is in a world he had never known before that morning, brooding and violent. He's like Batman. His thoughts scurry like cockroaches. Could you use a more pleasant example? Other cute things scurry. What about like rabbits? Those are cute. Those scurry. It doesn't have to be like cockroaches. Are your thoughts covered in shit? Like, please, cockroaches are disgusting. Like, if your thoughts are covered in shit and they're disgusting like cockroaches, keep them to yourself. Darting and thrashing before he takes hold. Why are your thoughts thrashing at you? He questions his actions, wondering why he kept Derek a secret from the police. He can't put it into words yet, but feels the plan forming in his head. I think it's because he's seen a lot of videos of police brutality, so he's like, maybe don't say anything that's suspicious or gets their attention at all. He knows he can't let the police interfere, not yet. Derek comes first. Everything after that is a non sequitur. Yeah, seek that revenge. Shifting his thoughts from planning, he gives way to his base instincts, vividly imagining his hands gripping Derek's wrist. Ripping his arm right from the socket. That's an interesting base instinct response. Can't say I've had that one, but, you know, I'm no tailor. He feels satisfaction and doesn't question it. His Aunt Joy shows up an hour later, still scrambling as she leaps out of her SUV. I hope she put it in park first. She goes to Dale at first, mumbling something about work and her punctuality, while he pretends to listen and stares into space. He had been doing it for the past hour, going over the events again and again in his head, if only to stave off visualizations of torturing his former friend. It's kind of intense. Those are foreign thoughts to him, thoughts only made possible by Derek. Derek is the only one who could have this effect on him. The only one close enough to fester like a tumor at the base of his heart. It was he who first showed him Saw. Before moving on to Hellraiser, Hostel, and Saw. Well, is it like the updated Saw? Was that also called Saw? Maybe it was so good he ought to show it to him twice. With a collection of Josef Mengele documentaries to season the pot. Why? That's not like horror. That's really gross to put that in with like real life grotesqueries. What the hell, man? Along with like Hellraiser. Like, oh, you thought Hellraiser was creepy. Look at the Holocaust. Like, that's a totally different, like, don't invite me to your horror movie party and then include Holocaust documentaries, okay? We're not friends. I don't want that. That's not a fun, spooky atmosphere. I put on the creepy haunted house music. That's not like the Holocaust at all. Get it out of here. Derek had given Taylor all the hate he would ever need and the worst ways to express it. He does not give in. Not yet. His rage just beginning to bend the lock. Oh, the body is wheeled out as the deputies give the last snippets of their report. Taylor is stringing together a line of one-word answers. That lobotomite. The other officers herd the neighborhood back to their respective houses, the yard already cordoned off for the CSIs. Aunt Joy gathers up Taylor's bags before lighting a cigarette, trying to gently corral him back to the car without blowing smoke in his face. She doesn't succeed, but he doesn't care. He's too busy gripping the note in his jacket pocket, not even taking out his hand to open the door. God damn it, he is just gonna go and see him and not say anything. You stupid asshole. Just don't. That's like the worst idea. I mean, it makes for a better movie, but in real life, don't do that shit. You basically have evidence right there. Like, perfect evidence. He rubs it coarsely with his thumb, feeling the raised pen strokes like Braille. Yep, but that's not, because Braille isn't just... whatever. His nail catches on a hardened lump, a single drop of coagulated blood. He retracts his hand, focusing on the new silence. Aunt Joy starts down the street, offering what sympathy she can. It's the best she can do, and Taylor doesn't expect anything more than that. He knows that the rest will come down to him, even if the method escapes him. He spends the rest of the drive contemplating, the silence only interrupted by the static-laden serenade of the radio. How do you think he's going to try to kill him? I mean, my immediate thought is strangling him to death. Well, he's like, why? They arrive at his aunt's house just as the spring sun touches the horizon, the harsh light skewing the scenery. The first thing he notices are the bushes, still in pristine condition in contrast to the overgrown lawn. The fecund yard swipes at his pants. Why does it sound like it's attacking? And threatens to overtake the walkway. Oh my god, he thinks he's the boss of you? Beat his ass. But not a blade threatens the fresh mulch that houses the shrubbery in front of the house. A cat as overgrown as the yard. What? No, the cat is overgrown? Its hair? The cat itself? Waits in the porch chairs, glaring at Taylor as he enters its territory. No, that's a wizard who got turned into a cat. The Brownwood living room connects directly to the kitchen. The comically large television and frayed armchair giving off a distinctly 70s vibe. The 70s, were they known for comically large televisions? I really didn't get that feeling from the 70s. I felt like they were small because TVs were hella expensive back then. I mean, I could be wrong. Giant television, such a 70s vibe? What? Okay. I mean, TVs are like way cheap now. They're so cheap. Back in the 70s, it was like really, I don't know. Maybe I just missed that vibe. Somebody could link me a bunch of pictures of people chilling with their giant 70s TVs. And I'd be like, huh, the more you know. And Joy offers him some dinner. Leftovers and nearly flat soda. But he never acknowledges her. I mean, I wouldn't either. That sounds kind of sad. Before she can finish her sentence, he slinks into the guest room, plopping his bags on the floor and bouncing onto the twin bed with a resounding thump. For hours, he stares at the beige ceiling and floral wallpaper until night sends the neighborhood into slumber. Taylor continues to think, his thoughts growing darker as the light continues to recede. He thinks about peeling his skin back with a knife, sharpened to pointlessness. Sharpened to pointlessness? You mean it's blunt now? A blunt knife? You made it a rectangle? What a terrible idea. A punishment Derek would find quite ironic. He always did like knives, Taylor thinks. Oh, the irony. So ironic. Certainly got enough practice. Derek had gone through a medieval phase in middle school. Oh my god, I know you, child. A medieval phase? Hear ye, a dork has been perceived. And had a sizable collection of ornamental blades? He's a mall ninja, you guys. He He's gonna get you with his ornamental blades sharpened to pointlessness. Yeah, all those blades, I'm sure, pointlessness. Oh my god, he had a medieval face and has a number of ornamental blades. Isn't he also like the emo? I can't, this is beautiful. I feel like I can imagine this character so perfectly. By the time he graduated high school, he also still had a large collection of his virginity. He would practice in the backyard when his dad wasn't home. His father barely tolerated their steel presence. I'm sure he'd have been way better with it if you weren't like, their steel presence intimidates you, doesn't it, father? You wouldn't understand. I was born in the wrong time. I'm medieval. Oh, dear Lord. One day his dad came home early when he was practicing, rushing inside at the sound of the V6 and crushing gravel. Don't give it a nickname and try to make it cool. One of the knives was in a reverse grip, so on his first hurried stride, he brought the tip of the blade down in his thigh, forcing him to limp up the back stairs. Taylor had to come over under the guise of a group project just to help patch him up. I mean, if I was the dad, I'd hate it too. That's your kid? Ugh. You failed. You may have procreated, but Darwin is not pleased. Should have taken the testicles off, not just the thigh. His imagination continues down the line of suitable tortures. Waterboarding, the rack, the Spanish mule. You fucking dork-ass little bitch. I'm sorry. You can't even torture someone in a, like, not stupid way. I'm sorry. You're Mr. Mall Ninja sitting in your mom's house staring at the ceiling thinking about how you're gonna medieval torture this guy. No, you're not. I mean, maybe in this story, what are you going to do? You're going to make an Iron Maiden and just press him in it because I'm so mad about Daddy. I don't get it. The Spanish mule. Get the pear and just put it in his asshole and open it. Hooray. Oh my god. Might as well be like, I'm going to make a blood eagle, you guys. I could kill him and get my gang initiation in one. We're a medieval gang. We ride around on horses and no one tells us what to do. Sorry. Look at me. I have a flail. I got it off eBay. But his musings always circle back to the note hiding in his jacket pocket. What did he mean by my justice? Really don't get it. You're dumb. Clearly he was getting revenge for his dad, but why wait so long? Why now? And why let me know it was him? Because he wants to lure you into his sick trap. Idiot. You could just give it to the cops and then, ha, you fell into my trap card, which is you leaving obvious evidence that you killed him. Got him. Like, that's a big gamble that he's this stupid, but I guess you know how stupid he is, so. He could have just skipped town and no one would have known. The local PD is hardly competent. I mean, now you have a note. It doesn't matter if they're competent or not. He said, here's the note and here's literally where I am right now, the killer. And you know who it is. And he wrote it in his own hand. And I'm sure he touched it. And you're just going to go there and let him kill you and throw away the note and no one will know. You're so dumb. Like, goddamn, you are so dumb. Not you, listener. You're amazing. Unless you're listening to stolen content, in which case you're trash. Let me see. Where am I? They couldn't even get any conclusive evidence when Derek's dad died, not that they put in much effort. The ordeal dragged out for months, plenty enough time to Derek to spread his lies and ferment his rage. If there was ever a time to kill my dad, it would have been then. What changed? Taylor tossed and struggled with the questions relentlessly assaulting his mind, never once getting a reprieve from the gravity of the moment or the sheer timing and serendipity of the events. Anxiety flowed freely through his arteries. I don't think that's how that works. Even as his brain shut down for sleep, the lingering fear of an approaching dream the only obstacle for his drooping eyelids. No dream came to haunt his tired mind that night, for the real nightmare had yet to transpire. He's gonna piss the bed tonight. Taylor spends the next few days waiting for the funeral to come, only leaving the house to satisfy the summons of the police. They ask more questions, of course, but Taylor provides no new answers. He has none to give other than the note, but that is his business for now. He will handle those matters eventually, but for the time being, all Taylor is interested in is drowning his grief. He should buy some more swords. Oh God, he has never been keen on alcohol. But he calls sodas egg creams, I swear to fuck. Preferring the calming effect of cannabis over the burn and barbarism of booze. He's the same motherfucker who would take baloney into an abandoned house that looks spooky and go, oh my God, it's haunted. Even after it became legal for him to purchase, he never gained a taste for liquor, only the occasional beer, and only Bud Light, and even then only watered down. Room temperature. He doesn't like it cold. He's got the best choices. After his first Q&A with the police, he calls an old friend from high school. I'm surprised he had any. One who still deals in illicit substances. Oh my God. So you're a drug dealer? He swings by the dingy apartment complex, don't judge him, and picks up what he needs, only suffering through as much pity and condolences as he can stand. Don't pity me, drug dealer. I pity you. Get out of here. Your apartment's dingy. I'm judging you. I can't say drug dealer. Illicit substance dealer. Purveyor of illicit substances. Do you perchance have an energy potion? And he's like, you mean meth? He's like, oh, prithee, some energy. It is manna for me. Sorry, I'm imagining too hard. I was just really into medieval stuff in middle school, so. I have so many ornamental blades, I could make a chair out of them. And I could sit in it too, because they're fucking pointless. His host tries to coax him back into the house, offering him a free smoke just for the tragedy. Only if it's crack. That cannabis ain't gonna do shit, friend. But Taylor leaves before he can even finish his offer. What an asshole. He feels guilty as he rushes to his car, but not guilty enough to do the right thing, so who cares? But the feeling is short-lived. Yeah, I bet it is. Being rude is forgiven in the wake of tragedy. Not by me, you little shit. I hope you suffer more. I'll never forgive you. He doesn't want to smoke at his aunt's house. He would never hear the end of it. Well, I hope you're not doing it. I'm just imagining it like inside in her bedroom while she's sleeping. Instead, he peruses the town and seeks out his old spots. Some public, some private. All of them glory holes. The old middle school is a no-go. One of the town's few cops holding steady in the parking lot. He's a pedophile. A good thing, perhaps. Not the thing I said. Derek and Taylor had found more than a few used needles in the dark corners near the woods. They put them there. The park near the hospital is nearly acceptable until a troop of dog walkers march out from behind the trees and interrupt the seclusion. You can't fuck there. He doesn't even consider the cemetery, but he passes by it anyway. Acclimation, perhaps, or maybe just tasting the inevitable. Tastes like old cum. From the cemetery, he heads toward the Presbyterian Church. His last option. Taylor had never been much of a believer. But he knew it wasn't wise to mock the beliefs of others. Well, he's a dumb shit. I mock your God. No, I'm kidding. Even indirectly. Come on, it's a little. Come on, you can kind of mock the other's beliefs indirectly. Just like a tiny bit of God mockery. Just a little bit. But like, If you're listening and you're offended, not your God, one of the other ones. It's fine. Yeah, no qualms about lighting up next to a house of God. Rastafarians do it to commune, do they not? I don't know. But he knew that many members... He's well informed by Wikipedia. He knows his shit. But he knew that many members of the church would not take it so lightly. He is about to turn on the long street that holds the church when a derelict... A derelict! You call the home... A homeless person is a derelict. My God. Let me guess. He moonlights as a chimney sweep.
May I shine your shoes, sir? I'm a derelict on the streets of jolly old London.
Yeah, that's that English accent. You know it and you love it. And that's the one. What the fuck? A derelict? That's like from Zoolander, derelict. It's a joke. Don't call them a derelict. Don't call any person. You're a derelict. Like, fucking what? Did you say it from your crown? Could they even hear you from up there? He stops on the right just as it begins to rain, two houses from the turn. Just up ahead is a stone driveway that bridges over a large ditch, the same ditch Taylor's car leans against as the ground starts to moisten. This is the only thing that's ever been moist near Taylor. The driveway disappears after the opening, the stone swallowed up by an overgrowth down below. Towered and draped by the many great willows that haunt the borders, twisted and holding on to the barely visible black fence like shoulders they will never truly release. Gah. The trees are still waiting. No birds or rodents to disturb their focus on the voyeur sitting just beyond their grasp. Oh boy, they fucking. Above the canopy, he can see it, the topmost spires of the house. The fragmented and mossy wood visible even from between the willows. A mailbox stands guard at the mouth of the driveway, vines engulfing everything but the faded characters. 1156. Ransom. He doesn't even need to take it out of his pocket to know, but he feels the pen strokes like braille nonetheless. The courthouse lay just before him now. He hesitates. But only to take a second look around. No cops. No Derek. The car flings a clump of sod as he climbs out of the ditch. The car doesn't like him either. But before turning cautiously over the questionable bridge, the willows massage and scrape the outside of the car as he pulls through the threshold. You're just like really dragging out this fight. Just kill him or not. I don't care. Just do it. Just do it, you little bitch. I don't care about your willow massage, you little pussy. Like a pat down before talking to a mob boss. Yeah, you would see it like that, wouldn't you? The driveway quickly splits into a teardrop circle. Because, see, I was imagining it more like nature giving you a car wash, but like doing the opposite because it would cover you in all kinds of pollen and shit that you'd have to wash off. But he was like, no, it's like a mob boss because I'm cool. Just beautiful. Let's see. He stops, blah, blah, blah. He doesn't want to get close. Not yet. He has to observe first and weigh his options. A murderer doesn't invite you to an abandoned house without some sort of catch involved. What's the catch, murderer? I can't possibly imagine what the murderer inviting you to an abandoned house, what the catch could possibly be. Just go in with a blindfold on, too, so he can surprise you. Taylor wants to wait until he feels safe to break out the contraband and start rolling. Calling it contraband? You've even admitted that it's legal, so you're so lame. You are the contraband. Oh my God. Sorry. But he quickly abandons the notion. I do not believe he could roll a joint. I do not believe it. He is going to feel safe here no matter how much he darts his head and checks the corners. It's legal. He keeps a watch as he rolls, shifty eyes wary of the encroaching willows reaching down and grasping at the small space between the overhang and long grass. Nobody made you drive to the abandoned murder house before you smoked your weed. No one made you do that. You literally rolled up on the house where the murderer is there to murder you and went, "This is a good time to take this cannabis." A substance certainly not notorious for causing anxiety in people. It'll be fine. Let me just dart around and look like the most suspicious motherfucker in all fucking history. Let's see. Fears crawl into his brain just like the vines slithering up the house, cracking open the windows and wrapping around the roof before folding up into a heap that crunches onto his terrified countenance. Not a heap. He pushes back his fear for a moment to watch the paper as he rolls it all together, making sure not to spill too much out of the ends. You sad sack bastard. He licks the adhesive, scanning the house as he does. The upper levels are still shrouded by the willows from where he sits, but the bottom floor is in clear view. Small statues, some destroyed, some intact, line the driveway, some of the rubble scattered across the stone. Greenish-white moss covers the rotting wood indiscriminately, like live vitiligo. That is not at all like vitiligo. At all. Vitiligo isn't a growth on a person's face at all. It's about melanin and pigment. It is nothing. It's nothing to do. Well, whatever. It's like living vitiligo, but not, because it doesn't grow on a person's face. It's very strange. With the poorly boarded windows reaching out in arbor agony. Bro, stop. Arbor agony. It's like a color. It's like a dark blue. Like your soul is dark blue. Arbor agony. Screaming for death through broken glass. Well, lucky for them, they were never alive to begin with. He tries to look in past the glass into the humid darkness, but pulls away quickly, feeling much like a peeping Tom who stayed a minute too long. Any minutes are too long. Don't peep on people. Peep. Pull, but you're not supposed to. Lighting the tightly rolled joint, he searches for emotion through the smoke. He trains his ears on the yard, trying hard to ignore the passing traffic and zone out any life, like a caracal in tall grass. Clouds pass overhead and blot out the sun, transforming the clearing from a disarray of shadows and foliage to near twilight. The joint nears the halfway point when the barking of a faraway dog piques Taylor's attention. He turns his ears towards the sound, trying to gauge the distance, trying to see if the dog might be in the backyard. The skin between his eyes and nose curls as he attempts to force his ears to hear, until the shuffling of brush on the passenger side jerks his body back to the left. The willow overhang drapes over the silhouette of a vested man. You can tell it's a big vest. The clouded darkness skewing all vision of his torso. Well, then how can you tell he's wearing a vest? His belt is decked with various containers that jut out at the waist of his shrouded form. Now that's a real dealer. Gun holsters reaching down toward the centers of his thighs. He came prepared to murder. That is a well-equipped murderer. He is hunched over, looking into the window, just enough to see the long, thin brim of his hat and his slightly crooked nose. The ember of his cigarette glows brightly in contrast to the shadow that holds it, a large cloud of smoke billowing out from a mouth unseen. Again, I ask how he knows about the vest, but the smoke and stale air dry Taylor's eyes. He's just blowing it straight at him. Fuck you. Forcing a long avoided blink. Why'd you avoid it so long? When his eyelids reset, don't call it that, the figure is gone. Without a moment's hesitation, he whips the car around the teardrop driveway, tossing the joint out at the end, desperately trying to convince himself that the lingering smell of tobacco is just his imagination. 2 days later, that's it, you didn't do shit, you just sat there and bitched out like a little bitch. Is it because he had like 500 guns strapped to him? Were you surprised? He knew you wanted to kill him. He's like, haha, I killed your dad. Don't bring it to the authorities who could do anything. Do it and kill yourself, you know? He couldn't help it. 2 days later, Taylor attends his father's funeral with his aunt. The Jenkins family is there for the most part, aside from a few West Coast cousins and a scattering of relatives from his mom's side. Only a few people from town come, mostly from his father's work. Almost all of them have to hide a snide smile before they leave. Taylor sees only two of them, and he ignores them both. Part of him is distracted by the moment, the body being laid into the ground. Part of him consumed by Derek and the house, the horrors it holds, and what horrors awaiting. The final section just runs in circles like this story, avoiding all thoughts of the figment, the imaginary cowboy that haunts the fringes. Yeehaw. His thoughts hollow out dry rivers in his brain. Anything to drive away the emptiness festering within, the unavoidable truth. It has been 3 days since the incident, since he saw the stinking insides of his father's viscera. Like, he has to talk about it that way, damn. And not a second of it concerned an emotion. No grief, no sentiment, no explosive release to the pressure that should be there, must be there, the pressure to come. So erotic, he can't help it. Only fear and focus, cold logic frosting the edges of the compulsive need, that unstoppable notion that sucks the air out of all other sensations until all that remains is the tunnel between himself and his goal. You can't tell him he can't have those lollies. They're really 1,000, I swear. All is dark and cold. The voices of discord are quiet now. Yes, I've silenced them as well. Where the fuck did I go? The voices of discord are quiet now, near silence. The solution begins to form, shaded by the light. Whatever the fuck that means. Taylor tries to pay attention as his uncle gives the eulogy, stammering a bit. I would never. But all is forgiven. Taylor wishes he could do that as well, but the thought only lasts a minute. He looks around, trying to appear aware, suddenly realizing his existence. Yeah, his father is dead, and they will expect respect. Expect respect. He stands up straight, squares his shoulders, straightens his suit. Scanning the crowd, most are looking at his uncle coming down from the stand, giving way to the pastor. The rest are whispering, avoiding his gaze. He turns away. He has had more than enough of rumors. All he desires is certainty. A question and an answer stands on the hill, catching his eye just as he begins to scan the horizon. His mouth drops immediately. A few notice, but none follow his gaze to the man leaning against a tree on top of the hill, the shadow of his body immolated by a dying sun. His figure is recognized immediately. Oh no. Broad-brimmed hat, tall boots, cloud of smoke emanating from his lips. Light pierces the wisps, dancing on the orange beams like blue fire. One leg is up, heel to the bark, anchoring his tall frame to the wood. Taylor holds his eyes open, like with his hands, afraid he will vanish again. Irritated, he finally gives way, fully expecting the apparition to disappear. And yet he remains still, only moving to take a drag of his cigarette or ash to the ground. He isn't looking at the funeral or Taylor, and yet the young man can still feel his awareness. He sees without seeing, he thinks as his teeth begin to grind. A force within him urges him to move. Another wrapping around holds him in place. He waits for the cowboy to break. Neither of them make the first move. Is he going to pull out his, like, samurai sword against the cowboy? They're going to have an epic duel. From the right of the tree to the back of the cowboy, a figure emerges. He stands in the open, palms pointed at the hill. His face is dark, the sun finally rolling behind the knoll. The red light tints the grass, angled just enough to glint off the man's teeth. He is smiling. Yeah, they're really shiny. Taylor cannot hear over the words of the pastor, the dull roar of whispers, but swears he can see him laughing. It only takes him a second to realize that it is Derek Roth leering down on the spoils of his work. It took you too long to realize that. The force to move jolts through his limbs, barely strangled by the need to blend. This is his business. These people have meddled enough. I'm pretty sure they're just at a funeral. He holds himself in place as the pastor finishes, molars throbbing from the force of his clenched jaw. Let it go. The crowd finally breaks, like his teeth. People lifting the veil of grief and circumstance to talk trivialities. Many tried to catch him, to catch his eye, and be relieved of the burden of condolence, but Taylor flattered no one. I will not flatter you with my attention. Choke on your fucking condolence, bitch. Pushing past her outstretched arms and irrelevant protestations, his eyes stay trained on the hill, on Derek and the cowboy. They exit down the back of the hill once he breaches the perimeter of the crowd, right before Taylor breaks into a sprint. He gets his tie off as he crosses the peak of the hill, right next to the tree where the duo were standing. He shoves it in his pocket, keeping his eyes on the shadowy figures penetrating the tall pushes at the bottom of the hill. He slows down on the descent, taking choppy steps to avoid a tumble before picking up speed to charge through the shrubs. He nearly makes it all the way through, but his sleeve catches on a branch just as he clears the needles. He quickly decides to rip it. The clothes are worth nothing now. The only things that matter are ahead. He's edgy, you guys. The sun is setting as he sprints through rows of tobacco. The dark figure is becoming difficult to see, walking eerily fast up ahead. Taylor isn't worried. Even as they cross the tree line into the next field, he knows where they are going. He can feel it. They had grown tired of waiting for him to decide, and honestly, Taylor had grown tired as well. He had grown tired of worrying, questioning, feeling like he had been stripped of control, peeing the bed every night, soaking it through to the floor. He imagined that he must feel very much like Derek had felt, and quickly realized that had been the point all along. Derek wanted him to feel as he had felt, bring him to where he had been, but would the ending be the same? Would he find answers, resolution, perhaps even justice? Is there even such a thing to be had from a fucked up situation like this? All questions cease as the willows grip his shoulders. He rips them away and trudges into the growing darkness, the final beams of light fading from between the sparse openings in the trees. The figures enter the crippled house as Taylor stands outside, panting. He wants to stop, to gather himself instead of rushing in headlong like a buffoon. Not a buffoon. It almost works until that wretched laugh splits the air. Derek Roth stops at the door, turning around just long enough to let out a cruel chuckle and step inside. The time for waiting has passed. Taylor jumps up the creaking stairs and enters the crumbling castle. That is the end of part two. Join me next week for your ho-ho horrific conclusion of your holiday Drunk and Dangerous. I hope it's horrific. Well, I hope it's a conclusion. If not, it'll continue into the new year and you'll take it. just like I will, and hopefully I will see you then, unless I scared you away. And if I did, too bad. I'll see you next time. Bye, guys.